but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Yeah, just a lot to fix and a lot to clean up. But that's good things as well. You know, practice has been fiery, and it's been good. So, yeah, we needed that. We needed just to keep getting better. And you know, you look at the film, and you just keep diving into how we can improve.
You know, I'll have to go back and watch the film exactly. I thought they did a good job of stopping our interior run game, and we struggled at times to get the ball in the perimeter and be able to move it down the field. You know, I think they did a really good job of staying on top, you know, defensively as well to stop us from creating, you know, explosive plays down the field. And then they did a good job generating some pressure, so we have to evaluate, you know, some of those looks.
Have to evaluate the looks, have to watch the film. It's possible Idaho's going to be pretty good in their division, but Oregon didn't get it done, even though it got the win on Saturday. Brentley Weissman, former NFL scout with the Chargers, worked for the Patriots, Raiders, worked at Oregon, worked at UCLA. He's joining us now. Brentley, I got to know what you thought of the Oregon game.
John, thanks for having me. Always good to talk and chat ball with you. Not going to lie, John, did not think I'd be sitting here on Tuesday after the Idaho game not feeling happy with the way we played. You know, I thought the Ducks were going to come out and really show that they were the number three team in the country, and it was anything but. And I think, you know, for me, watching that game, and I did watch the film, I watched it this morning, kind of really in depth, there was a lot for me to be alarmed, John. Really, the offensive line, I thought, thoroughly got outplayed. I know there were some injuries heading into the game. I know Matthew Bedford, the transfer, who was set to start at right guard, was out with injury, and that shook up our rotation and our lineup. But we were beat. You know, we were beat man-on-man. The right tackle, Ajani Cornelius, you know, he had first, second-round buzz heading into the year. He was a liability out there, and that really has nothing to do with the lineup changes. That's just man on man. Can you beat the guy ahead of you? And we didn't a lot of the times. And it's just concerning. You know, it's concerning coming out of the gate week one that there shouldn't be a slump. Everyone, all the guys should be ready to go, ready to play. And for whatever reason, the Ducks weren't.
I watched the beginning of the game and immediately you see Oregon under center. And I thought, okay, there's some new things happening here. Dylan Gabriel at quarterback, no Bo Nix, no Bucky Irving. What do you think the biggest change was personnel-wise? Is it Bo? Is it Jackson Powers Johnson? You know, where's the biggest loss from last season in your mind just after watching one game?
Yeah, great question. I think Bo, look, I think Dylan had a good game. I think he made good decisions overall. I'm not going to say Dylan was the problem. With that said, I think Bo had a lot of trust and just played with phenomenal timing with his weapons. He knew where they were always going to be at, when they would uncover, and Bo really just trusted it. I think Dylan maybe held on to the ball a bit too long. There were multiple times he looked hesitant to run, which I thought was really interesting because Dylan can move. But he was about a tick late, kind of tucking it and gaining those yards that were open and there for him. So I thought that was an issue. I think, John, you know, I think the loss, like, look, Jordan James is a phenomenal running back. But Noah Whittington is not on the level of what Jordan James was last year as a number two. And so what I mean by that, well, last year we had a kind of two-headed monster between Bucky Irving and Jordan James. This year, I'm a firm believer. I think Jordan James should get 85% of the carries. I think our offense stalls out the minute he's off the field. Noah Whittington, I'm looking at the box score. I think he had only one less carry than Jordan James. That cannot happen. You look at the averages. Jordan James had 6.3 yards per carry. Whittington had 2.4. And that's not on the line. That is a skill. That is a complete talent disparity between the two backs. I think we have to feed Jordan James if we want a strong running game.
We're talking to Brently Weissman, former NFL scout. You know, the offensive line in general, is it out of sync? Was there a problem at a specific position? What did you see on the O-line?
You know, coming into the game, John, I know everyone was concerned about Charlie Pinkard, the player filling in at center, because we moved Iapani Malolu to right guard with the loss of Bedford. Pinkard did great. You know, he was not the issue at all. The issue was the right side with Malolu playing out of position at guard. He's really a center, John. He's not great in terms of lateral mobility. He needs kind of protection on all of his edges. He's not a natural guard. And so he was beat with quickness inside multiple times. I mean, he really struggled in both phases of the game, run and pass. And again, 65, Cornelius, the right tackle, who, you know, I talked to multiple scouts. I mean, he had first, second round buzz. He was whipped multiple times by this Idaho left defensive end who I did some digging. He is an NFL player as well. So it wasn't like, you know, Cornelius was getting beat by some walk-on, you know, no name. The Idaho end is good. But look, John, we play Ohio State in a month, right? I mean, they have two first-round edge defenders. And if Cornelius, the right tackle, who's really the blindside protector of a left-handed quarterback, can't block one-on-one, we're in some trouble.
The defense, any concerns at all? Or do you kind of look like, hey, they played really well aside from the trick plays? They looked good. I'm going to come back to the offense, but I just want to get your overall assessment of Tosh Lapoy's defense.
Defensively, I thought we looked really good. I love our front seven. You saw us get pressure both with blitz, but also just on a four down front, and guys beating the guys in front of him. I think Mateo Unglole, he's set for a monster year. You see that? I mean, he. Two sacks, two TFLs. He was outstanding. I got 44. QEOT, I thought he flashed. He's really explosive off the edge. Jordan Birch had some good plays as well. I think our front four, John, and really it's kind of our front six, the way we play our edges, they were outstanding throughout the whole game. A little concerned with the linebacker play. I know Bosa was banged up a bit, and not quite sure what happened with Justin Jacobs, so he wasn't really on the field a ton. But, you know, our linebackers kind of bit on some play fakes, as you mentioned, and some of those the two touchdowns we gave up were based on trick plays. But I thought, you know, overall, the defense did good. I thought our transfer from Kansas State, the safety, Kobe Savage, he looked as advertised. That man is big, he's explosive, he can fit the run lanes, he can cover. I think he's a really good player. I thought Jabbar Muhammad looked good at corner. Still a tad concerned with the corner opposite Muhammad. I think that's going to be, you know, once you get into conference play and start seeing some of these top receivers on the outside, who is that player lining up opposite Muhammad? I think that's something I'm keen to see. But overall, I thought the defense did its job. It's the offense that really kind of let this game get out of whack.
We're talking to Brently Weissman, former NFL scout, previously worked at Oregon and UCLA as well. Bigger picture stuff. You know, they've got great recruiting classes, a lot of transfers. You know, Dan Lanning and his staff can really recruit, Brently. We all see it. The evidence is there. I have questions about can they develop these guys once they get them? And then game management. Did Dan Lanning learn something from the Washington games last year, the first Washington game in particular? I saw him going for it against Idaho. It bit him with not getting it on fourth down, and Jason Eck, the coach at Idaho, did a smart thing, trick play right out of the change of momentum, caught Oregon sleeping. What did you make of the coaching? What do you make of the Bentley that Lanning has the keys to? Can he drive this thing?
Mm-hmm. I'll say this, John. I think I'll preface saying I am a fan of Lanning. I think he's the right man for the job. I'm not going to overreact off one game. With that said, it is extremely alarming to me that with 5 minutes left in a game that we are up 17-14 at home to an unranked FCS opponent, it's 4th and 7, and Lanning has the offense on the field. In a game where we could have easily, easily lost. If you don't get that 4th and 7, which ended up being a 4th and 2 because of an offside penalty, then it's a 3-point game, and all Idaho has to do is, you know, get one chunk play, tie the game with a field goal. It's anyone's ball game, going to OT. And it worked out for Lanning this time going for it. You know, he got the 4th and 2 because of the penalty, found Tez in the flat, touchdown, we go up 10, game essentially over. I get it. The result, happy with the result. But the process, it's the process. Because what that tells me is he has not learned from UW game last year. You take those points when points are there to be had. Yes, we got away with it against Idaho. Happy that we won. But if he is in that same situation against a Michigan, against a Wisconsin on the road, against an Ohio State at home, I would hope to think that Lanning would take the points and try to trust the defense, who, as we discussed, did really, really well. I mean, the only points the defense let up was off trick plays and off of, you know, kind of momentum killing opportunities where, you know, we turned the ball over or it was a 4th and 1 stop on our 36-yard line. Our defense played great. Take the 3, trust your defense to make Idaho's offense go the length of the field and get 7. The chances of them doing that are very, very slim. But if you only go up, but if you miss the 4th down, you're only up 3, it takes one chunk play for them to get into field goal range and they can tie it. And that's why I just very much disagree with Lanning's decisions. Again, it works out for us, but it is really alarming that he has yet to learn from the same decisions that cost us the UW game at UW last year.
I want to talk about something you might be uniquely qualified to kind of discuss, but Chip Kelly leaves UCLA to go to Ohio State. You mentioned it. It'll be a month now or 5 weeks in Ohio State. It'll be October 12th. They'll be at Autzen Stadium. And I don't think it's being talked about enough, the Chip Kelly factor. What kind of factor is he when you put him in a play-calling situation for a program like Ohio State?
Oh, man. I mean, look, even when Chip was getting, you know, crapped on over the past few years, you know, I get it. You know, I was with him at UCLA. The recruiting wasn't great. You know, the press conferences weren't great. One thing that I won't let anyone dispute is that Chip Kelly, as a game day play caller, game day decision maker, is still an elite coach, an elite football mind. There is very few offensive play callers, offensive game planners, offensive schemers in all levels of football, NFL, college, high school, that are better than Chip Kelly. And I think he's going to be a massive, massive advantage for Ohio State because that man can exploit weaknesses. He can find the players who can be exposed on the opposing defense, and he's going to do it. And unlike at UCLA, where he didn't have the top players because, again, he wasn't the best recruiting in today's landscape of college football, he has the top players at Ohio State. He has the playmakers. He has the receivers. He has the running backs to really exploit those kind of mismatches. And so I think Chip is a huge weapon for Ohio State that, you're right, is not being talked about enough. And that's really just because the national media, you know, kind of like to pick on Chip due to the UCLA stuff. But for us from the West Coast, you know, we know that as a play caller, as a schemer, he's still very much a huge benefit to whatever team's coaching on.
Give me an idea of what it's like when Chip's in a meeting or a film session or one of those game plan sessions where he's saying, here's what we're going to do.
Oh, I mean, his level of preparation, I mean, he he knows exactly how the defense wants to defend his offense based on what he's already shown, and he knows how to kind of use that against the defense. It's like he's playing chess, and you know the defense is playing checkers. He knows how to kind of put his players in a position where they have a already kind of an advantage over the defender they're lining up against. It's truly remarkable. And I think that level of innovation, that level of play creativity, it's very rare. And I think that's what allowed him to have had such a success in terms of the offenses he's coached. And to me, I think our defense, it's going to be a good battle. I think personnel-wise, we have the personnel to match up against Ohio State. But from a coaching standpoint, I do think, you know, Chip will be able to get his and exploit some coaching advantages there. It's just a matter of if our players can execute.
Brentley Weissman with us, former NFL scout with the Chargers, Raiders, and others. Let me ask you about DJ Uiagalelei. I saw him at Oregon State all last year, and I'll tell you what I saw, and then you tell me what you're seeing this year at Florida State. But I see a guy who's a half a click late making his reads, waits till he sees a receiver open before he throws the ball, doesn't trust and doesn't feel it, as you said, like Bo Nix did a year ago. Maybe he doesn't see it. But I get the impression, Brentley, that DJ was the biggest, best athlete all his life growing up, and it didn't matter. But now he's on a stage where he's around, you know, everybody was the biggest, best athlete that's out there on the field. And he's just a little late, a little slow, can't quite get the ball there. And it's killing him because he does not look good. You tell me what you see.
Yeah, I see a lot of what you see, John. You know, I think he's really not a natural passer. He doesn't throw with anticipation, doesn't throw with rhythm, doesn't throw on time. I think he was always the biggest kid with the strongest arm and was a really good athlete at a young age, and that allowed him to get away with, I think, some of the natural deficiencies that we're seeing live yesterday, right? I mean, he just doesn't see the field well enough. He's a tick late. Again, I think he throws to what he sees. He doesn't throw to what is supposed to be there. He's not an instinctual player. And it's unfortunate to see him get beat up. You know, he is a good kid, a good family. I wish he stayed at Oregon State. You know, he wouldn't have probably a better situation for him, you know, not in the national limelight at Florida State, where every interception, every missed throw is under a microscope. And it's tough. And I don't really see it getting better, unfortunately. And, you know, I don't know how much longer he'll have that starting job, which, again, you feel for the kid. You know, this is his third school, and he's probably realizing that this is it. And yeah, but it just kind of is what it is. This is a major college football, and it's a billion-dollar business, and Florida State wants to win, and so they're probably going to make a change. But yeah, John, I think his NFL hopes are all but gone unless he switches positions.
Miller Moss, meanwhile, at USC looked fantastic. You know, what's happening there? What did you see at USC, LSU?
Well, I mean, I'll start with Miller Moss. And so when I was at UCLA, we recruited Miller Moss pretty hard. And, you know, he's an undersized kid, but for all the reasons why I think DJ Uiagalelei is struggling is why I think Miller Moss is succeeding. I mean, he sees the field, very, very instinctual passer, throws with anticipation, can really layer the football over defenders. Not the strongest arm, but has really good touch. And he kind of reminds me, John, of Jay Kaner, you know, the Fresno State quarterback. That's the way he plays. He's a gamer. He has that. It's like you can't quantify it. He's not the most athletic, but he has the it factor. And the guys believe in him. And he kind of always had that going back since high school. So I'm really happy to see him get that opportunity after Caleb left and kind of show the nation that, hey, you know, I'm a guy who may not have NFL five-star traits, but I can get the job done as well, and it's just my way. So I'm happy for him. I think overall, my take on that game, I think D'Anton Lynn, the defense coordinator from USC, is the real deal. I think what he was able to do as a game plan and schemer against LSU's offense was outstanding. He has the USC defenders tackling. They're swarming to the football. They're explosive. They played violently. And that's just not the type of aggression we are used to seeing USC play with. I mean, probably the past decade. And so I thought he had a really, really strong showing. You know, I think D'Anton Lynn, his stock is through the roof for the USC Trojans. And hopefully Lincoln Riley can keep him because he is a phenomenal defensive coordinator.
We're talking to Brently Weissman. Brently, I appreciate you making time for us, man. Really good stuff. Love to get you back on. Maybe we can get your assessment leading into that Ohio State week for Oregon and keep up the fight. Appreciate you, man.
Appreciate it, John. That sounds good to me.
There it is. Brently Weissman. Steven, we'll kick this around coming back, but I think we see DJ the same. USC looks like it could contend. Twist of fate. But is there overreaction out there, good and bad, positive and negative? Of course there is. We're going to talk about what the biggest overreactions are, who comes back to earth or rebounds in week two, coming up next.